Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
We have tonight's guest, director of the Global Consciousness Project and author of Connected, Dr. Roger Nelson.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Mustangs of the West. I am Mark Legere, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am excited about today's entire show, actually, and I have to thank right from the top our contributing producer, Allison Goldwyn of Synchronistory, for connecting us with Dr. Roger Nelson. I understand he doesn't do a lot of these kinds of things. He's so busy with doing what he's doing, which we're going to get to talk about, that this feels so important and exclusive, and I'm excited because the information that he shares is so important. So I had the opportunity of getting to speak with our guest, and it was on a particular day that was extremely busy, and I was going through so many things, and happily our time together ran over what we had planned, and that was really fortuitous because he just shared so much information. But it was other things that were just piling up and piling up that I was not so happy about. And one particular thing I fell into an electronic snag of something that should have worked, has worked in the past, but for some reason wasn't working. And so I figured I could spend a little time just going through the research online for this particular company that I don't need to mention the name, instead of calling their customer service, which I pay for, by the way, but I figured I could figure it out. So I spent about an hour figuring it out. And I thought, how is it that this company does not say exactly how to do this, which is something that should be easy to be done. So I went ahead and just called customer service. And let me tell you, I know this happens a lot these days, but this seemed so ridiculous. And if it wasn't that I was trying to get something done and I didn't have a lot of time for this, it might have been even hysterical. Well, one way or the other, for sure, hysterically funny or hysterically not so funny. So long story short, over a period of 1 hour and 40 minutes on the phone that I spent on hold and being transferred, I wasn't counting, but I think it was 8 or 9 times, without exaggeration, that I was transferred to another department and then holding and then another department. And oh, that's not, and I kept asking the same question each time. And I got ridiculous departments, like I got billing, and I know a little bit about customer service, and I understand that maybe the department was closed. As a matter of fact, I even asked somebody, maybe the department is closed or they're slam busy, that they're rerouting to hoping somebody else can help this person. I don't know what was going on. But at this point, it had been now 2 hours and 40 minutes because of the hour I spent previously, and I still hadn't gotten to the task that I needed to get to or seen the light as to whether there was even a resolution or not. And I try to be cognizant of the fact that person number 6 or 7 or 8 has no idea how long I've been on the phone or how many people I've spoken to. And so me being upset or irate with them, who it's not their fault, there's a big, big, big company, isn't going to help them, and it's definitely not going to help me or my heart. Or, well, after having spoken to our guest, Dr. Roger Nelson, I had something else to think about, and that is, it's not going to help the global consciousness of the planet if I get upset at this moment in time. And I really liked that, like, as if I needed another thing to stress about, but it's not supposed to be stressed about. We're supposed to be, I feel, conscious of it. And we'll get into it in the conversation today, and you'll see more of what I mean. But though this is something that I tried to be conscious of and have been for a long time, but now I had a new reason to think and be as compassionate as I can at times like those, and at times like these, especially in the world. By the way, I got the issue resolved by the company, helped me resolve the issue, and all is well. And I maintained that compassionate moment as much as I could. I think I did fairly well, and happy to have the constant reminder and the new reminder or the new understanding of how we affect each other. And so that's why we're excited to have this conversation. We have the director of the Global Consciousness Project, GCP, and author of Connected. Here is Dr. Roger Nelson on the Life Changes Show. Welcome, Dr. Roger Nelson.
Thank you, Filippo. I'm glad your situation resolved and that it may have actually been helped along a little bit by your decision to be as compassionate as possible. I'm smiling.
Well, thank you, because you had a big part of that. And I didn't take that into consideration. Please elaborate.
Well, I think there is a magic that we sometimes intuit and sometimes experience, but we're so trained to think in scientific terms that we don't really quite understand that this magic of putting love out into the world, the result of which is to get love back from the world. You know, It's like an endless and beautiful cycle. Compassion for yourself and compassion for other people is worth its weight in, let us say, gold.
Okay. Well, you do something very fascinating that most people don't know is happening out in the world. And by the world, I mean everywhere that we know on the planet. You have a hand in something that's happening. So what is being placed around the planet, and what is it for?
Well, the idea that I had many years ago was to try to see if I could catch a little glimpse or a little bit of evidence relating to what Teilhard de Chardin called the noosphere. That's a layer of intelligence that's like a layer of atmosphere or ionosphere, but this one, noosphere, is made of knowing knowledge, and it ultimately is made of us. Teilhard's idea was that we are, you know, highly evolved creatures, but we're not the pinnacle of evolution, no matter that we think so. Instead, we have another phase to enter and go through and grow into, and that is to become this noosphere, this consciousness for the earth. So that was my target or my goal. With a lot of background that we probably don't have time to talk about, was to see if I could use some instruments we developed in the laboratories at Princeton that are responsive to consciousness and intention and things like compassion and love. And that if we spread these around the world, it might be possible to create a network that could capture the first inklings of this global consciousness called the noosphere.
This sounds like it would be a very sophisticated piece of equipment. And interestingly enough, the sophistication comes after. The equipment itself is what?
Well, we use what are called random number generators. They're a device, physical device, that produces an unpredictable sequence of ones and zeros, which you can count electronically. But my wife says, if you want to explain what a random number generator is, just think about a high-speed electronic coin flipper.
Clever.
Completely unpredictable heads and tails, which are actually in computer speak called ones and zeros. So we make, we've made, I mean, by now there are manufacturing companies that are selling these for $50, but we started building them in, 25 years ago, and build enough that we can make a network spread around the world in pretty much all continents, although we never got one in Antarctica. Maybe we will. Maybe we will for the second iteration of this project. Anyway, these instruments are designed to produce random numbers. Collected the random numbers, sent them to Princeton and our servers. They were archived so that we created a data history. Every second, a new trial, a new random number that we would put into a database. Every hour of every day for 25 years now, for almost 26 years. So we have what you might call a data history that could be compared with events of importance to people in the world, and including events that might evoke a lot of compassion. And what we found was that over the years, we would make predictions that our network, our numbers, would stop being completely random and start having a little bit of structure. It turns out that that actually does happen, but the amount of structure is so tiny that we have to collect a lot of data and a lot of different tests and trials before we can be confident about the result. But over the 17 years of a formal experiment where we predict ahead of time what will happen, we were right sufficiently often that the composite result over the 17-year-old formal experiment has a probability of about 1 in 1 trillion or 1 in 3 trillion of being just an accident.
Wow. Well, so random number generator that's producing ones and zeros, like heads or tails, one would expect, I'm assuming, that over a period of time, 50% of the times it would be a one generated and 50% of the time it would be a zero. Though not exactly necessarily sequentially, right? It could be 1 1 1 0 1 0 0 0 0 kind of thing, right?
Yeah, you're a Purdue random number generator. But you're exactly right. The idea, in our particular application, every second we'd gather 200 of those ones and zeros and count the ones, which would be very nearly 100, but sometimes 98, sometimes 112. But the distribution of those numbers that were like 100 plus or minus is a normal bell curve, where getting very far away from the expected value of 100 just doesn't happen very often. But it can, it produces, it's possible that the mean of 100 can be pushed a little bit to the high side or low side. And that's detectable using statistics. And those statistics were used to tell us whether we have captured an influence from consciousness or not.
So the idea here is, the hypothesis or what you have found, is that at particular events in time, that no longer is 50-50. It'll be more of one or the other. And you're interpreting that to mean that somehow humanity has affected that.
Right. If people are interested, they can go to my website, which is global-mind.org, and look for look in the menu for the science. You can read the details, but basically, what you're saying is correct. What we do in the formal experiment is make a prediction that from 12 o'clock noon to 6 o'clock, there will be a period of time during which global consciousness from responding, for example, to a hurricane or a volcanic eruption, or maybe a terrible plane crash that kills everybody on board, or a terrorist attack, or maybe something nice like a celebration of New Year's or a meditative gathering. In any case, some event in the world that gathers the attention and the, you might say, synchronized attention and emotions of a very large numbers of people. And we would predict then that the data during that period of time would no longer be random, but instead would show correlation between these devices that are separated by thousands of kilometers and designed and built to be completely random in the first place. So in other words, we set up an experiment in which we could compare the history of events that affect large numbers of people with the history of the data in our ongoing continuous collection of random numbers. And what we found was there would be a parallel, a surprisingly strongly supported fact in scientific terms, that when people do come together synchronized by events in the world, and especially if their emotions are shared across large numbers of people, then we would see these changes in the data. And the implication of that is that we changed the data. We don't know it. We weren't trying, and we weren't even aware, most of us in the world, that there was any such thing happening. But we were able to show that in this very special circumstance of shared compassion or shared love, shared anger or fear among large numbers of people, we changed the world very slightly, where the world in this case is these highly sophisticated random number high-speed coin flippers.
So this has great implications. And so when we come back, we'll talk about that, because what I'm also hearing is there's prediction in the sense of beforehand, knowing that New Year's is coming, for example, that you predict that there's going to be some kind of evidence in the data that we were all coherent in some way. Then there are the events that aren't predicted, like we'll talk about when we come back, 9/11, that then you can predict that if you go back and look at the data, that you will find something significant in it, that the consciousness experience to affect the numbers is fascinating. So that's we're going to be talking about that when we come back here, and also what the implications are or what we could do with this for the good of all of us when we come back here with our guest, Dr. Roger Nelson. And then a little later, we're going to have our Ask Dorothy segment. And then we are joined by Mustangs of the West, all on the Life Changes Show, when we come back right after this.
Want to connect with amazing people who are committed to making a difference? From the Heart Tribe is a platform, community, and movement with the purpose of bringing like-minded humans together to help animals and the environment in order to gain a stronger connection and understanding of the world around us. They're dedicated to effectuating positive change by empowering individuals to organize meaningful and engaging experiences that build compassion for animals and the natural environment. Their founders and members' passion is to inspire others to actively get involved in their homes, their communities, and the world, to raise awareness about the issues we face, and most of all, to be part of the solution. Through their efforts, they have also accomplished some amazing and tangible achievements. Their Pickup for Paradise beach cleanups have collected over 50,000 pieces of foreign debris, And also, thanks to animal rescue and recovery volunteers, over 30% of the volunteers have become vegan or reduced their meat intake. Daily habits make a big difference. Please join any of their upcoming events by going to fthtt.org and signing up for their newsletter. You can also follow on Instagram and Facebook at From the Heart Tribe. Have you felt inspired to meditate but you just can't? Do you suffer from anxiety but fidget toys just make you more fidgety? Want to replace negative self-talk in your head that keeps bringing you down? Introducing the latest self-help solution, Phi Beads. Transformational beaded jewelry inspired by ancient wisdom, science, math, and psychology. All Phi Beads are designed to incorporate the powerful Fibonacci sequence, nature's mathematical formula that has shaped our existence from the beginning of time. The Fibonacci sequence, also known as the golden mean or the golden ratio, is recognized by our conscious and unconscious mind and resonates as order out of chaos, like we see in plants, flowers, seashells, ocean waves, the pyramids, and in our own body. Not only beautiful, they feel good to wear. Phi Beads can help anchor tranquility, positivity, focus, and structure in your life by doing the Phi Meditation. Phi Meditation helps you harness the power of I Am, or intention, affirmation, and manifestation. Affirm the life you want. Get your set of Phi Beads at PhiBeads.com. That's Phi, P-H-I, Beads.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show, broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We are back. We have titled this episode, Coherent Consciousness Creates Order in the World. Order in the world sounds great. How do we achieve that coherent consciousness, and what kind of consciousness do we want to achieve? We are speaking with director of the Global Consciousness Project and author of Connected, Dr. Roger Nelson. It's been a pleasure so far. Unfortunately, we have just a short time together, but he packs so much in. The implications of this is so great. Dr. Roger Nelson, I mentioned 9/11. What can you tell us about the events after 9/11 when you all looked at the data?
Right. When we started seeing on the television that there was a plane had crashed into the trade towers, and then another, and then the towers collapsed, we knew that this was so momentous, such a powerful experience for huge numbers of people around the world, that we would have to identify this as an event and look at the data to see what the data told us. And then we spent actually a lot of time and looked at it in various different ways. But the simple formal experiment was set to look at just the period of time during which these terrible things were occurring. And it was significant. But when we explored further, we found that the data started changing some hours before the first plane hit. And it continued to change and stay radically different from really true random data for about 3 days altogether. It was, we had never seen anything like that in the data before 9/11. And frankly, I think that we've very seldom seen anything much like that since then. But the implication of that was that our powerful engagement in probably something like emotions of fear and anger at the beginning, but turning quickly into the compassion-oriented kinds of emotions. We were brought together by this horrifying event to become a kind of global consciousness. We didn't know that individually. We didn't know I am now a part of a global consciousness. At least most people wouldn't think that way, but we were bound together by the experience that we shared. And I think that's a good description of what I think the overall implication of the data from from things like 9/11, but also from things like New Year's. I can draw a word picture of the amazing kind of results that we find almost every year right around midnight. People all over the world pay attention to this, even though they may have their own New Year celebration, like the Chinese New Year, which is a different date. We pay attention in huge numbers, not everybody in the world, but really a very large proportion of us. We pay attention to this abstract moment in time when we change at midnight from one year to the next year. And what we see in the data is that it drops down, becomes less volatile, and right about midnight, it reaches the furthest from its normal state, and then it goes back up, creates a V-shape right around midnight in the data. And this is something that, again, doesn't happen unless, the only correlate with it is our human participation in a shared event that brings millions or billions of people into the same frame of mind.
So, Dr. Nelson, I can understand, based on what you're sharing, that New Year's, as an example, we are anticipating, we're preparing for a party, or we're excited or not excited, whatever the case may be, but we know it's coming and we are participating in that collectively. I can understand that. For an event that we aren't anticipating, like 9/11, or I think you also mentioned in earthquakes, that we start to also see the buildup in the data. How does that, is that explained?
Well, it's interesting, and it's something that we've found in what I think of exploratory further analysis. It's not something that we have ever understood or developed a way to study formally. But if we look at the data, we find that quite frequently there is this kind of precursor activity. The data start changing well before. So one of the possibilities, and I think it's the most likely one, is that a global consciousness made up of all of us can have a premonition or a precognition in a way that's very much the same as an individual may have a premonition, a dream that predicts something will happen the next day or day following, or just a moment, a flash of intuition that I need to, you know, drive over to the side of the road and adjust my seatbelt or something, you know, after which we discover that had we continued driving, we'd have been in a crash in an intersection just ahead. This happens to people. It's well documented kind of thing. Almost everybody has an occasional surprising premonition or precognition. We mostly just brush it off as thinking, well, it's just a coincidence. But this people who study these kinds of things work very hard to distinguish an actual premonition from just a coincidence.
Wow. Since these are all over the world, have you found situations where, for example, something that happens, let's say, in Africa that is not necessarily televised? I guess it doesn't have to be televised. The consciousness feels, and that's part of the understanding that we're getting from this data. But I suppose if it is televised, then the data will come from all parts of the world. And if it's not televised, or if it's not as big of a global event, that it's only localized, that you see changes.
Well, that's a very interesting question or subject. And again, we have some information about that. What seems to happen is if it's what we might call a small event that doesn't involve people all over the world, just as you described, that event may nevertheless produce an effect in the data, but it will tend to be a little smaller. And the important thing that we have been able to discover is that it affects the devices or the correlations of pairs of devices more in the pairs that are near this small event, right? If it's a really global event, the data indicate that it always, there's no differentiation with regard to the distance between the devices. Instead, that it's just global in every respect. Something like 9/11, or indeed something like New Year's, even though we celebrate that, you know, one time zone at a time, we can pile those up and make a generalized midnight calculation, right? So if it's a really general and really global event, then the whole network responds in pretty much the same way. There's just no differentiation. Whereas if it's a small event, there is a little bit of a localized effect in terms of the data from pairs that are closer together or closer to that small event.
This is,
I think you said it better than I did, Filippo.
I'm getting this from you. I have all these great notes from the other day. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that I wrote and highlighted is that your mission is to try and persuade people to work on the possibility that we can raise our awareness of this unconscious connection to the point that we can take advantage of it and do what with it.
Oh, absolutely. For many years, I was just deeply involved in the science, but as nobody be surprised that at some point I start thinking, you know, so what does this all mean? What's the point? Yeah. And the point, I believe, really is just as you say, that the data are very strongly supportive of the idea or the finding that we are connected at a deep level. It's unconscious, this connection, for the most part. Most people have no idea and no way of perceiving the connection. But what I hope we can do gradually through talking with people like you and your audience is to convince ourselves, not just other people, but all of us, that we have the potential of raising up this unconscious connection into awareness and take advantage of it to become, as the sages of all cultures have said, to become one in a functional way. When we do that, as we do that, we'll be able to cooperate and collaborate and create a brighter future. It's my deepest hope that before the civilization collapses and crashes around us, which some people predict, and on good evidence, that we will find it wise and rewarding to live up to our potentials, to manifest the potentials that we have. We are amazingly capable beings, we human beings, and we're kind of squandering a lot of our capability now. If we become more conscious of who we are and what we aspire to, I think we will be so much better off individually and, of course, also as a global consciousness.
So speaking of individually, so since we have most control over ourselves and how we think and how we feel, then where do we start?
Well, that's a beautifully important question. I think my own answer to that is meditation. There's a kind of a practice of meditation that's of the sort that really just is going into yourself and ceasing to be concerned and ceasing to use your energies for concerns and questions and whatnot, and instead maybe breathing a love into your heart and breathing love out again to the world. That kind of thing is probably the closest that I can come to a recipe for individuals participating in the rest of the world. I mean, compassion, I mentioned before, and love, those are emotions that connect us. And if we practice those, that unconscious connection that we share with all people all over the world will become more manifest. We are fortunate to have examples in our midst now and then. I mentioned Thich Nhat Hanh, who was my personal kind of guru, if you will. His idea of meditation was just to be there, you know, be in a calm meditative state. Do as the Zen Buddhists say, just sitting. That ultimately, I think, is one of the best things. But then to be further practical, to go further, we should join with other people, meditating together with others, with a partner or with a group. It's an experience worth having. It makes the meditation stronger and clearer and easier. You still are going into yourself, but you're aided by the field of consciousness that's around you. So there are groups all over the world who are doing things, not just meditation, but other kinds of work toward saving ourselves from the worst excesses of humanity and getting on with the business of building a future that is bright and has a place for everyone.
I love that. And in our conversation, you added dances and choirs and of course, festivities, gatherings where we can consciously bring consciousness and conscientiousness. And from my experience that I shared in the monologue, it's also the times in between, right?
The times in between when we can continue to dance.
Nice.
I think I love it that you bring that up because humans invented dance and music and rituals before they invented languages, I'm quite sure. And if you think about the rituals they have, I mean, they're all different kinds, but most of them are designed to bring us together, to connect us in such a way that we are feeling and perceiving it directly and participating with each other. We're touching each other through the field of consciousness and the emotional fields of love and compassion.
Dr. Roger Nelson, you've touched us today by sharing in the way that you have and caring in the way that you obviously do. I have been touched and moved by you and your work, and I want to remind everybody, Dr. Nelson gave the website earlier. It's global-mind.org, global-mind.org. And there's also gcp2.net. Now, we have these links, a further explanation about his work, and Facebook links at lifechangesshow.com. Go to the page for Dr. Roger Nelson and get all that. But again, global-mind.org. Dr. Nelson, I truly, this has been an absolute pleasure and a privilege. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Filippo. I think your work is also, it's a major contribution to getting on with the business of becoming fully human.
Thank you for that. And you mentioned actually when we spoke that a proponent of conscious evolution was Dr. Barbara Marx Hubbard. So we had the pleasure of interviewing her and now the pleasure of interviewing you. And I feel that thanks to the work that you two and many others, like you mentioned, HeartMath, et cetera, have done, we are hopefully well on our way to, how did you put it actually on one of your websites? that we can consciously evolve. We do not have to say in how we do have a say in how humanity grows into its future. We can take control of our destiny, and the time for that is ripe. Dr. Roger Nelson, thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, wonderful. Have a good day.
Wonderful. You too. Thank you so much. And with that, it is time for our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Barbara from North Carolina, and I need some advice. Up until recently, I've been able to stay in a peaceful and happy state of mind. However, with all the recent scary events happening, I am having sudden attacks of anxiety and overwhelming fear. My heart starts pounding, and I begin sweating, and my breathing becomes compromised, and I simply cannot think clearly. The places I used to shop are being ransacked, and no one stops the thieves. How can I calm myself down and look forward to leaving my house to go out and about like I used to?
Dear Barbara, these are interesting times indeed, and it is more important than ever for us to choose response over reaction. Let's remember that as the divine children of God that we truly are, we are the power in our world. So once again, I urge you and all of us to start our day with a prayer of gratitude, thanking the universe for our protection and for the protection of the ones we love. I am sharing with you the prayer of protection that I have used to keep me in a happy state of mind and free from fear. I am the divine child of God. I am the light. I am the power in my world. Only good comes to me and from me, and I declare this. In the name of divine love, unalterable and eternal, in the name of divine knowledge, unalterable and eternal, in the name of divine values, unalterable and eternal, in the name of divine wisdom, unalterable and eternal, in the name of divine creativity, action, principle, and work in which we move and have our being, in the name of the power, glory, and grace of the living Word of God, with this prayer I know and declare that all evil and every thought inspired by evil is scattered and reduced to nothing. I refuse permission for any living and non-physical being to enter my body, mind, soul, spirit, and energy field for intentions that are other than love. I break all contracts, vows, and agreements I might have made knowingly or unknowingly in all time, space, and dimension that in any way diminish the fullest expression of my joyful soul essence. I break these agreements from this moment backwards through every experience of my past and from this moment forward until the end of all time. I command that these energies and people to leave my space now. They have no power over me. I have received divine protection from these energies and know that they cannot return to my energy field in any way and for any reason. I now build an impenetrable shield of light around me with this heart intention and my free will. I thank you, God, knowing that it is already done, and so it is. Precious Barbara, I trust you will use this prayer and see how it assists you in taking your power back and assist you in choosing love and peace over fear and distrust.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com. And we'll be right back with our performance guests, Mustangs of the West, here on the Life Changes Show when we come back right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes Show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
Well, I am excited about our performance segment because our performance guests are the band Mustang of the West, and actually most of the band is here, and this is really exciting because we've got Sherry Rain Barnett, we've got Susanna Spring, we've got Holly, well, we don't have Holly Montgomery or Aubrey Richmond, but we do have Suzanne Morissette Cruz with us. And speaking of Suzanne Morissette Cruz, who helped arrange getting everybody here today, I have to share real quickly. So I have had the pleasure of getting to work with Suzanne for many, many, many years, as she played in many of my bands for many different occasions as the drummer that she is. And so a few years ago, we hadn't worked together for a while, and I had gone on to do other things. I saw a viral video go, and I don't know how many people sent this to me that said, you got to watch this. And it was, if you haven't seen it, just plug it and you'll find it. It's still going around. It was a bride who jumps up on stage with the band in her big wedding dress and all, and sits down behind the drum set and starts to drum to the delight of everybody that at the wedding and everybody that has seen it since. So that is my friend Suzanne Morissette, drummer of Mustangs of the West. Welcome, Suzanne, to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you, Filippo. Thanks for having us on. And it's such a pleasure to finally be on, since we tried this several years back, but finally it happened. And thank you for having us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And we wanted that to happen for a while. I know that band members are here and there, and we were doing in studio only. And so, but I am happy that you all are together and doing this. I'm excited about the music. I'm holding Mustang of the West Sea of Heartbreak CD and have enjoyed it already. And I have a couple questions about it. But before we move on to any of that, how did you, Suzanne, get connected with country? Because when I met you, you were French Canadian. In fact, about as French Canadian as you can get, the province of Quebec and Quebec City.
Yes. When French Canadian, always is a French Canadian. But yes. I really love all kinds of music, honestly. And jazz was my heart when I knew you. And, you know, we played together in several different occasions, but I really like a lot of different kinds of music. And when Sherry came up to me at the NAMM show way back in 2017, she came up to me and we just met and had a blast. We just like hung around, And then she mentioned to me she was trying to put the band Mustangs, back then was the Mustangs, back together. And so I was like, well, you know, she had, they had another drummer, Kathy, and she had mentioned that Kathy was unable to be in the band, so she offered me the position. And when she also told me that my old-time friend, my good friend, Holly Montgomery, was going to be on bass, I'm like, okay, it's a yes. So it was pretty easy. And, you know, and she played me, she said, our singer-songwriter has this song that I'm convinced is going to be a hit, and I will let the other girls talk about this song, but that I listened to that song and I'm like, oh, wow, well, this is a beautiful song. And, you know, and I was gladly, I gladly said yes and said, yeah, let's do it. I'm in.
And here simple. You are. Yes. And so speaking of Sherry, I know we just met yesterday, but I have a feeling like I know you, and it actually could be through your other work, which is also artistically as a photographer of music photographer, right, Sherry?
Yes, that's true. I've been doing it all my life since high school. I went to the Fame School in New York City, and I majored in classical guitar. And then at night, I'd go, you know, running around the streets of Greenwich Village or anywhere where there was music that I was passionate about. And I started photographing musicians for the, at that point in time, underground newspapers. And then it continued from there. I never stopped shooting, and I finally did a book within the last couple of years called Eye of the Music. Mm. But I continued to play guitar as well, you know, in different formations, different situations, but always a music photographer.
So you were one of the originals of Mustangs, originally Mustangs, right? And now Mustangs of the West. And then in 2017, what happened?
Oh, in 2017, it really was probably the end of 2016. And I was just thinking, I would see other bands out there that I thought, God, that would be really fantastic if this was the time that we had the Mustangs together. And then I realized that maybe we could do that. And I had stayed in touch with Susanna Spring, our lead singer and our main songwriter. And she had been sending me self-produced CDs and songs along the way. And sometimes she's come to visit. So we continued our friendship, and Holly and I had continued our friendship. And we were three of the last remaining original Mustangs, and the original Mustangs were together for 7 years. So I just proposed the idea first to Susanna, because we needed a voice, and I always thought she was the voice of the Mustangs and the heart of the Mustangs as far as songwriting, and asked her if she'd like to come down to LA to record one of her songs that I had fallen in love with, which was Too Short from California. And Holly was coming to LA for another reason, so I said, let's try and work around that. And then I had known Suzanne, drummer Suzanne, for, you know, since, you know, for years, and always wanted to hear her in the Mustangs. So as you know, I approached her about that. And then I had become acquainted with a local LA fiddle player named Aubrey Richmond. And I had seen her with another group. And again, I thought, wow, she would have been the perfect member of the Mustangs. But, you know, oh no, the Mustangs aren't together. So and then I went, well, maybe we can do it. So anyway, the five of us came together. A couple of band members literally met each other 2 days before we went in and recorded T-shirt from California. I set up a recording session with good graces of my friend Snuffy Walden, who's a very famous guitar player and composer. And we went in and not only recorded the song, but we also shot a video.
And that song is, we're going to get to hear it now, but before we do, so Susanna, I understand this is where it all began for you as well, although I mean, how does one say that? It's all begun when we're born. And then you were doing the band, and then you went to Nashville and actually started working with the big record company. And so you've always been in the heart of this. But this song, I want to know what it was inspired by, and I'm hoping it's not a personal story.
But they always say the personal is what's universal. But I will tell you that I can remember when this song came to me. I always had a couch in my little place in Nashville, and I would sit there and kind of strum and hum and work on melodies. And the chorus for this song, which you all will hear, came first. And it really came out of the fact that even though I loved Nashville creatively, I was a staff songwriter for some music publishers, which was a very fun and very odd job. You know, you would, we always said 3-3-3, you could write three times a day. They encouraged co-writing because then more than one person could, you know, from each publisher could pitch the song. So I worked on this chorus, and then I got together with Wes Hightower, who was a session singer there in Nashville and also a good writer, and brought in the chorus. And the chorus was really all the things that I missed about California. You know, I just checked a lot of the places. I'm in Northern California now, but prior to moving to Nashville, I had lived in LA, and that's how I met the other band members. So it had everything that I loved. And then we sat down and crafted the verses, which made it that kind of Midwestern soap opera that it is. So, it's kind of a sad song, but I have to say that we called it, it's a sad song with a great hook. And we called the song She's Got Your Heart, because the chorus ends with that. And then, of course, staying in touch with the wonderful Sherry, when I played her that song, she said, "Oh, no, 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 you have the title all wrong. That song is called T-Shirt from California." No, it isn't. No, it isn't.
Sold.
I mean, listen to it as She's Got Your Heart. And so she won me over with it. We actually went back to the publisher and, you know, did it. And also known as for the song. So, and officially changed the title. So the lyrics itself, even the verse lyrics, mention a lot of things about California. And we also kind of crafted it, you'll hear, with some real sunny sort of Beach Boys harmonies, which maybe balance the story to the song. So I don't want to say it's one of those angry young women songs, but I guess it is in a way. We always felt like the chorus was so strong with the song, and the band took to it. And like Sherry said, this actually was the song we went in and recorded, and this is the song that got us our record deal. Sherry took this song around to record labels in LA and got a meeting with Kirk Passage through a mutual friend, and he heard it and invited us into the studio, I think Clear Lake Audio, to do basically a long audition. The band, we played about six original songs, and we played them, and he had us change the key and change the tempo, and different producers would sort of amble into the studio, and he would say, "Oh, this so-and-so is just stopping by," but you know, they were stopping by to listen and to give him an opinion on, you know, what they thought of the band. And at the end of that night, he said, "Well, let's all go out to dinner. How would you guys like a record deal?" So quite of an amazing story, and it really came from this song. So.
This is so good. So we're going to have the pleasure of hearing this song. It's T-Shirt from California. Now, the version, did you do two versions? Because this is the version that came out as a single. But is it the same version that's included in the second album?
I believe, Sherry, was this a remix, I think, for the second album? I'm trying to remember.
I'm not certain. If anything, it's really, really close. You're not going to be able to tell the difference.
It sounds very, very similar. And because we had released it prior to, you know, shopping the song around for a deal. So,
but. Well, this is this is a good version, whichever one it is, and I'm sure they're all good. It got me too, and I've enjoyed it several times since I received this song. So here it is for all of you to enjoy as well. Here are Mustangs of the West performing their pre-recorded song that set this all up to the next level for them. Here is T-Shirt from California on the Life Changes Show.
You said you wanted to go out west, but you said nothing about someone else. You just wanted to reinvent yourself, far away from these Midwest checkerboard fields. You say the ocean shines like a diamond, there's sunlight everywhere. But I know what keeps you there. It's the sea in her eyes, the sun in her hair. I got a T-shirt from California. It says Sunset Boulevard. I got a note that you wrote on the back of an old postcard. But she's got your heart. Talk and talk about the view from the canyon or the drive up to Malibu. You never talk about me and you. Guess you got a new life, got a new attitude. I got a T-shirt from California. It says Sunset Boulevard. I got a note that you wrote on the back. Just another souvenir. You said you might be needing some of your stuff, so I took the liberty of piling it up with a couple of extra things I just got packed that she may as well have, 'cause I'm sending them back. I've got a T-shirt from California. It says Sunset Boulevard. I got a note that you wrote on the back of an old postcard. But she's got your heart. She's got your heart. Yeah, yeah. She's got your heart. She's got your heart. Said you wanted to go out west, but you said nothing about someone else.
And there it is, T-Shirt from California, Mustangs of the West. Find them at mustangsofthewest.com. That's their website. And then they're on Facebook and Instagram. Look them up, Mustangs of the West. And we have their links. As a matter of fact, a great video of How Blue, which is very cool. Videos are great, by the way, and the songs are great. So good, good. Good on y'all. Go to lifechangesshow.com and find their links, find more about their story and how they've come to be. And that brings me to Sherry. What's next? What can we look forward to for Mustangs of the West going forward?
Well, I presume you're talking about 2024, which is coming up fairly soon.
Yes.
And we're hoping to get out and play more, of course. And but in the meantime, well, right now we have a Christmas single out, which is called Everybody Wants Peace on Earth.
Oh.
And it's actually a song. It's a pretty universal song. Susanna and Holly and I wrote it, and it's kind of our version of John and Yoko's eternal peace song, war is over.
Mm-hmm.
And at least that's the way I see it. But it's also a song with a few lyrical changes we could turn into an everyday song. I think it's just a positive message. And then we've got two albums out in 2023, which is very exciting. And the second album is a little more of a compilation that just came out that has T-shirt from California, because we had some singles like T-shirt that were only released digitally before this. So we have some new songs, then kind of a, not a retrospective since we haven't been together as the new band for that many years, but we have singles that were not available in physical CD form as well on the second album, down at the Palomino. And speaking of the Palomino, there's going to be a documentary called Palomania about the world famous Palomino Club that in North Hollywood, where people, played for decades. It was just a center of country music, basically country rock. And we used to play there as the original band. So Susanna and I were interviewed for the documentary, and that's coming out in early 2024. So all of those things could congeal, come together, I think.
Very nice. Well, let us know, and especially when the Christmas song comes out. That's exciting. We need a song, another song like that, as many as we can get. And I have to say, Suzanne, I've heard you sing many times on the band with me, and that was always a fun moment in the band. But I wasn't expecting to hear you sing on this album. So when I was listening to Sea of Heartbreak and I came up to Learning the Game, there you were. Tell us about that. It's a Buddy Holly song, right?
Yes. That was very interesting when Kirk Passage, our executive producer, came. We were in the studio in the process of recording, and there was a few days left, and he was still looking for one or two covers for the band to do. And he loves to do that, bring us some covers and try to see what we can do and make them sort of our own. And he brought up this Buddy Holly song, and we just kind of all listened to it. And we're like, just wondering how we could make this our own. And then he played us a different version of of that song, Learning the Game, by a band called Black Tie, that was a band, the band of Randy, we just lost him, Sherry, remind me,
Randy Meissner.
Thank you, who just passed. That was his band, and he played us that version, and we were like, he said, what about doing something more in that vein, something like that? And then Holly said, our bass player, Holly said, why don't you have Suzanne sing this one? So that's how it happened. And we were, I was like, okay, I guess I could give it a shot. So we did that. And then when I was in the booth singing my part, my lead, I was warming up with singing the French song, La Vie en Rose, just to warm
up with.
And then he said, wait, he said, we should do a French version of this song.
Ah.
So he had me, after I did my track, he had me in the back. He said, you have to come up with the French translation of this, and then we'll do a version in French, which is on our newest album, on Down at the Palomino. So that's kind of nice. The story of how it happened.
What a great story. Well, I look forward to hearing that version too. And yeah. Speaking of collaborations and other band members, this song that we're going to hear now, Crooked Road, Susanna, you wrote this with somebody very special from a special band. Tell us about the story behind the song.
Crooked Road was a song that I wrote with Rusty Young from Poco. And we have some, our label has some interesting connections to Rusty. But at the time, I was living in Nashville and I met Rusty through a songwriter friend of mine, wonderful singer named Michael Kilsch. And I was writing for Blue Water Music at the time. And Rusty and I decided to make a writing appointment date and sat down. And I believe he had brought in the title, you know, Crooked Road, and that line, how can love go straight to your heart and be such a crooked road? So we crafted the song from there, the verses and that second part of the chorus. And to me, it's just such a song that wouldn't have been out of place for Poco. It's got lovely, lovely melody line in the chorus. And we did what you often do for a publisher, just do a little working demo, they call it, and turn that into the publisher. So I turned it into Blue Water. And at the time that we wrote that song, you know, publishing and song topics kind of cycle through in Nashville, like everything else. And the songs that were popular at the time were honky tonk songs and drinking songs and faster songs. And here was this kind of mid-tempo, very wistful song about love and why love doesn't always work out. And so we turned it in, you know, we didn't go further with it, and we both forgot about it. And then years later, after we got our deal on Blue Elan, and of course now we're on the Blue Elan imprint, KZZ, we found that Kirk had connected with Rusty, because Kirk Passage, our label head, was a big Poco fan, and he had signed Rusty Young to a solo deal. So Rusty started coming out to Los Angeles, and that's how we met him. And we ended up, I sang on a duet with Rusty. He played steel actually on some of our songs, our song Time off of the first album, and just some wonderful tracks. And if you've ever seen him in the studio, he just makes it look absolutely effortless. The first take is always something pretty magical. And we all felt that he had a lot of music left in him, and he was writing more for a second solo album. And he passed away suddenly in 2021. And that fall, we were scheduled to turn in songs and start building and writing and collecting songs for our second album. So I was looking through my files for see if I had any songs that maybe we hadn't looked at or had overlooked for this Mustangs of the West record. And that I had some lyrics in my hand, and that lyric sheet fell out of the pile onto the floor. And I honestly had not thought of it before then. And I saw Crooked, you know, Rusty Young, Susanna Spring. So I went digging and called my publisher and said, do you still have a little recording of that song? And I looked through my own little work tapes, and we found something. And I sent it to Kirk and said, you know, this song sort of unearthed itself. You know, do you want to hear it? And he did. And he played it for a couple of other producers, Dave Darling, I believe. And they said, we think this is a hit song. You all have to put it on your new album. And so we did. We went in and recorded it. It's got beautiful Mustangs of the West, 3 and 4 part harmonies and counterpoint, little lines from Sherry, from Holly and Aubrey. And it just turned out great. And it's actually our radio single that is getting some airplay and some charting. And some
of course it is.
Music charts.
Of course it is.
Pretty interesting story of how songs find their time. You know, you can't ever discount a song. Sometimes they show up right exactly when they need to.
Well, and the song lyrics speak for themselves, very touching and very clever and very enjoyable. So we're going to get to hear it now here on the Life Changes Show. Here's Mustangs of the West, pre-recorded song on their album Sea of Heartbreak, Crooked Road.
a straight shot. No way to get turned around. From here to there, you can't get lost. No surprises, no wrong way. Why can't love be that way? How can love go straight to your heart and be such a crooked road? Such a crooked road. Used to be that we were so sure we knew where we were going. Why can't we see it like we did before? Believe it when there was no way. How can we keep from drifting apart when love's such a crooked road? So tell me what I'm missing, if love is really the shortest distance. Straight to your heart and be such a crooked road. How can we keep from drifting apart when love's such a crooked road? How can love go straight to your heart and be such a crooked road? How can we keep from drifting apart when love's such a crooked road?
Well, you can hear Mustangs of the West live, hopefully soon, somewhere in a city near you. In the meantime, you could learn more about them and get their music at mustangsofthewest.com. Find them on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. We have their links. Basically, it's Mustangs of the West, but we have their links on lifechangesshow.com. Enjoy them, and as much as we've enjoyed having all of you on the show, Sherry, Susanna, and Suzanne, thank you so much for bringing all of this to the Life Changes Show today.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.
It's been a pleasure, and I can't wait to see you all live performing in person. So all the best to all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, that is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeure, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network.
Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.